Bosley, brought to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
On the show today, I am joined by Alex from Martelli Buyers with a little bit of a different angle in for our investors. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday, and if you're listening live, it's been a beautiful day here in Auckland. Hope you've had a fabulous day and great weekend. Perhaps you're downloading one of our podcasts, which you can download from Apple and Samsung, iHeartRadio, YouTube, or basically anywhere that you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Great to have you along for another Monday. And this week, I welcome Alex, who we had to stall a couple of weeks ago when the flu sent me into bed. Alex, it just wasn't kind at all, but thanks for your patience. And it's great to have you here.
Likewise, thank you for having me on, Stephen.
Now, Martelli Buyers, but before we sort of get into the whole property and what your company's all about, I'm curious, tell us a little bit about your own journey. How did you end up in this world of buyers advocacy and where did it all come from?
Good question. So I've always worked in real estate. I was born and raised in Auckland, and I worked, especially for Barfoot and Thompson, throughout school, my final years of school.
Good choice, good choice.
Thank you. They were brilliant. They allowed me to come and work for them during work experience. They put me into each branch one day for the week.
Brilliant.
And I had a fantastic experience. And from there, I got to work for them in my school holidays in their head office. And that taught me everything about residential property. It was an amazing experience. When I went to Auckland University, they sent me down with the big boys in commercial, and I got to spend 3 years working there under the team, and that was fantastic because then I got to understand the commercial industrial side of the business as well. From there, I worked for a firm in Australia called Savills. They'd asked me to move over, and as much as I enjoyed it, I was speaking to a friend who told me about this amazing career where you can represent people, helping them to find homes and get paid for it and be out and about looking at houses all day. And it sounded like
what a dream
role. Dream. I was so young. I was 23. And I thought, God, this is great. And I went
and saw
this
firm. It's like having someone else's credit card for the week.
It sort of is.
Isn't it? Yeah,
it
yeah.
is. And I think a lot of people think that's what it is. And for me, mm-hmm. it seemed like it. And I had a brilliant few years. I really enjoyed it. I specialized in the eastern suburbs of Sydney. And we had amazing clients. You get to know them so well. Like, you really get to build up amazing relationships with your clients because they tell you so much. Mm. They are putting their heart on their sleeve and saying, this is what I need help with. So I loved the role. Really enjoyed my 3 years there, but always wanted to live in the UK, like so many Kiwis, and went up to London, and I worked for a very large firm up there, CBRE. And my years there, I worked my way up. I'd consulted on new build residential developments, large-scale developments in London and across the UK. And after so many years, I sort of climbed the ladder, per se, and ended up taking over our international business. So we had new buildings in the UK that we would sell mostly to investors offshore, namely in mainland China, Hong Kong, Thailand, Vietnam, Dubai,
wow.
all over. And so I got to flit around the world for 3 years building up teams and managing that. And during that time, we acquired a couple of buyer's agencies. So I'd had buyer's agency experience in Sydney, and I had buyer's agency experience in Hong Kong and the UK.
And did that translate here in New Zealand as well, straight away, or is this something you've had to work on?
I've had to work on it.
I bet.
So when I looked at the models there, and when I decided to set up this business, I thought, what is the best of each model, but also how do you adapt it for New Zealand? Because New Zealand real estate and culture are very different.
Was there a moment when you were in the UK that you went, this is it, I want to head home and now do this here? Like, what was the trigger?
It was, I came back in 2021, and obviously we were in COVID lockdown. I was spending more time here for personal reasons, and I looked around, and when I spoke to other people about what I was doing in the UK and what we had, they said, we have nothing like that here.
Mm.
I was also told by some people, that'll never work in New Zealand. You know, we have a DIY attitude. We do everything ourselves. I thought, well, that might have been in the 1960s, but actually, you know, a lot of people have moved beyond that, and more people are seeking help, and people are just incredibly busy. So I looked at it, and I thought, I'll take the best bits of what I learned in Sydney, and take the best parts of what came out of the UK and Hong Kong and adapt it for the types of homes we have here, which I consider more complex. Have a really detailed understanding of Auckland specifically. That's somewhere that we've really chosen to focus on the Auckland market and the intricacies that come with it, and build up relationships with relevant people here, but set up all the processes, structures, system, due diligence, compliance that would create creme de la creme, the absolute best we can in buyer's agency.
Brilliant. Look, for listeners who may not know, what is a buyer's agent? What do they actually do, you know, now in your New Zealand context?
Sure. A buyer's agent, in its traditional sense, is someone who has fiduciary responsibility to the buyer. That means they have a legal obligation to do the best thing by the buyer. In practice, that means someone who takes on a buyer brief, understands it, can challenge it and qualify it, and go out and find the right properties for those buyers, qualify those properties, complete due diligence for them, and make sure the buyer is getting, they should be, aiming to get the best home for the best possible price and making sure they're championing the rights of the buyer in the negotiation. It is, a lot of people would say, doesn't the sales agent do that? They do not. Their role is that they have fiduciary to the vendor and a duty of care to the buyer, which is, it's not a conflict, but it's a complex role to run for a salesperson, a traditional sales agent. We just protect the interests of the buyer.
I'm curious who decides to use a buyer's agent, but before I do, tell me more about the company Martelli Buyers, and I guess, you know, when did you formally form that, and what gap in the market is it trying to fill?
So I set up the business, I started working on it in 2022, and then it was formally kicked off in 2023, and it was just me at the time, and I thought this is either going to be a great success or a total flop, and I went and put my name against it, which is even more humiliating.
No pressure.
So I thought, I'm going to try it, because a number of people had told me it wouldn't work, and the reason I set it up was because there was a gap. I had so many people say, what you do overseas would work so well. There are people who would value independent advice, and there are people who say, I'm overwhelmed by the search. And the recurring theme, and the theme today, you know, 3.5 years on since setting up that business, is that our buyers say, searching for homes is taking out a lot of my time, and I'm concerned about how much time it's going to take up, and maybe already has taken up. I'm worried I'm going to overpay. I don't know who to trust, what to trust. I'm overwhelmed by the information. A lot of our clients, particularly our first-time buyers, they said, I actually don't understand the process.
Yeah.
Interestingly, some of our downsizing clients, we're dealing with more and more clients downsizing, they go, I've not bought a home in 30 years. So right. I know the process, but it's a 30-year-old process and what has changed. So the gap was people who said, I do want someone representing my interests. I want to know that there is someone who is dedicated to being in my corner who can tell me this is a really good home, this is why you should buy it, and actually has responsibility for that as well. So that was the gap, was people who are time poor, frustrated, people who are familiar with buyer's agents already. Buyer's agency is very, very common overseas, completely standard in the UK. There's 1,400 buyer's agencies in the UK, to put it in context. So we do work with a lot of international buyers, and by international I mean people who are typically moving to New Zealand, they may have residence visa or investing in or returning, and they say, I want someone to be my eyes and ears on the ground, and I'm very familiar with this process.
So you've kind of answered my next question, which was who. You know, I was curious, is it more investors or first-time buyers? But it's a bit of everybody by the sounds of it.
It's
that pulls on your service.
It does, and it's an interesting one. I think there's always been a misconception, probably compliments of Selling Sunset and Lux Listings, that this is a rich person's game.
Yeah.
Our average transaction is sitting around $2.3 million at the moment, which is for Auckland isn't crazy. 50% of our buyers were first-time buyers and investors in 2025, and those first-time buyers, investors, around $1 million. So, and again, this is putting things in an Auckland context, but lots of first-time buyers, a lot of investors. We've seen an increasing number of investors coming to us because a lot of them aren't in Auckland. So again, eyes and ears on the ground, but also a lot of investors who go, Auckland is complex. Where should we buy? What should we be aiming for? And a lot of investors, especially if they're new to it, they will go, I want everything. I want the best tenant, and I want high rental yield, and I want capital growth. And I go, well, you know, you kind of have to pick what is your priority as an investment? Because I'm not convinced that, you know, capital growth is just a given anymore. I'm sure it will be in the long run, but I think you have to be more strategic and clever with your investment choices. And I think there's a lot of complexity that comes with property that makes people nervous.
And I think you hit it on the head before when you mentioned about time. Our time is precious. And I think of Nicole, who we've had in here many times on the show, and she's a property investor that does amazing deals while she's flying between countries, and just one of those people that inspires you to go out and buy. But one of the things she says is she finds people who bring houses to her. For her, that would kill her investment time, going out and looking at property. She would rather pay someone and know they build a relationship with her, so it must be a buyer's agent, that sort of scenario. She trusts them, and they only bring what it is that she's looking for. And while that's happening, she's done 10 other deals and she's sorting other things. We are time poor.
We are time poor. And I don't know anyone who isn't. It's interesting. Even my clients, if one of them, you know, got mum and dad and one of them isn't working, they are still time poor. They say it's not just the time of going out to open homes and searching online. It's the wasted time of going to open homes where the photos were not what appeared at the end of it. Or turning up to a property where actually the agent's already got onto contract and mentions to you 5 minutes, oh, by the way, this one's already sold. It's the wasted time I think people have already had. It is also the fear of, what am I going to miss because I'm busy? You know, I'm manic busy. I haven't had time to read over the building report. I haven't had time to look into that dodgy retaining wall down the bottom of the garden. So people are time poor, and they will pay to buy their time back.
Brilliant. So what does a typical day look like for you? You know, what are you doing as you juggle all of this in your day?
When I'm not on Planet FM racing around. Yeah. It is, I mean, our average week, we are looking at a lot of homes. We have a small, we've got a reasonable sized team in Auckland. We try to specialize really in areas of Auckland, again, because it is complex and complicated. And we are looking at a lot of properties. Very lucky, we've built up some really good relationships with the sales agents who show us a lot of off-market properties. So we'll be typically seeing quite a few through the week. Through the weekend, we go to open homes just to keep on top of the market, pop around, see what's happening, go see agents, have a laugh. And then meeting with clients, qualifying, you know, speaking to clients, saying, really, what are our objectives here? We talk to our clients a lot. I have a rule in my company, ABC, which for most agencies is always be closing. Ours is always be communicating. You've got to communicate, keep people informed, keep them updated, stay on top of deals, stay on top of searches. So there's a fair old amount of admin. We're based in Newmarket, and we are in and out of the office constantly, mostly looking at houses.
Wow. What are some of the most sort of common misconceptions people have around a buyer's agent?
Oh, a couple of things. It's for the wealthy. It is not. We deal with some very, very wealthy clients. We deal with some clients who have worked their bottoms off to get together their deposit to buy their first home. So it varies hugely in misconception of only wealthy.
Yeah, well, I love that idea of a first home buyer having somebody who instantly just knows the industry, knows what to look for, because the last thing, when you have worked so hard or you finally got your KiwiSaver to a point that you can withdraw, do you want to go and buy a lemon?
You know? And that is, it's interesting you say that, because I think what people are scared of more now, more than the fear of overpaying, is the fear of buying the wrong home. And you see this, we've had a few people who have bought a home properly and they come to us saying, I had a really bad experience. I bought something, I've lost money on it. I bought a home, discovered an expensive issue. You know, actually didn't realize that an apartment tower was going to go up next door. And people who, I remember this lovely couple of years ago, who had the best intentions, they bought an off-the-plan unit, and although they had taken a beautiful care of it, all the properties around them weren't being looked after, and they took a loss on it when they went to sell it. They said, we can't afford to do this again. So I think there's a misconception that it's only for one demographic of people. There's probably a misconception that it's going to be a great expense on top of their costs. I mean, it is. We are retained by the buyer, but typically you're going to end up buying that home for a much better price because you know how to negotiate the property, you know the property values, you know how to, you know, which bluffs to go for and which to ignore. We are experienced negotiators. This is what we do as a job.
And I guess because you're working with investments, you know what property will make a good rental property. Mm. And so many first home buyers are only planning to live in it for a couple of years, get that KiwiSaver bit ticked off, and then they actually want it as an investment property. So they need to think not emotionally for the first home buyer, but actually think, will this be a good rental property when we're ready to move to home number two?
You're spot on.
Yeah.
We had someone say that the other day. We said, why do you want to work with us? And they said, I don't want my emotions to cloud the due diligence, and I don't want my emotion to cloud the strategy. And people do it. They go, I'm just going in, I'm just going to be black and white about it. Well, it becomes colourful very quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you have a sort of favourite, sort of memorable client story, maybe a deal that was extra tricky or surprising or something that you just go, I really love delivering for that client?
Oh, there's so many of them. I mean, we've now bought a lot of homes for clients, and the ones that really stick out to me, there are the homes that you wish you could buy 10 times over.
Right.
There are certain properties. I remember buying a fantastic one down in Meadowbank. We bought the auction for, this was 2.5 years ago, and it's a 3-bed, 2-bath, double car, little north facing garden with a lemon tree out the front. I paid 1.117 for it. If I could buy it again 10 times over, I would. See, there are the properties that really stick out in your mind. The tricky ones, there are the ones that you really had to work hard to get the background on. And we have to do a lot of due diligence. We do a lot of research. And the ones that really stick in your mind is where you had to battle through paperwork and understanding the property to finally get to an answer. One property, there was a very large insurance claim that wasn't disclosed at the time, and we had to end up researching it because the vendors didn't want to share too much about it, and that happens from time to time. The happy ones are, it's so funny, I always say to my team, you can never judge a search when they first come in. So I remember meeting with one client, and I remember thinking, oh, she's not entirely clear on what she wants. This is going to take forever. Well, we found a property off market. It was a really sweet little weatherboard in Meadowbank, and showed it to her. I thought, gosh, this ticks all the boxes. Bought it through, and she was really, she sort of scowled. She looked through it. She's like, not sure, in front of the agent. And then she goes out and she whispers to me, it's perfect. I said, I know it is. And we bought it within 3 business days. You know, it was right.
So you're running
happy.
Acting training as well before
exactly.
they come in.
Yeah, no, we really qualify the homes to make sure that they are. We don't like wasting people's time. When we bring someone through, we explain to them, this is why we've brought you through this property. This is what we want to achieve. But one thing I will say, every single home, and we've bought sort of 80, I think we're up to about 83 homes that we've bought, every single one had a curly. Every property has some complication on it.
You're kind of that balance between buyer's agent and detective. Like, you've got to go in and actually look in the background. Where when you're first buying a home or you're in a hurry, you do skip things because you're excited. You just want to get that paperwork signed because you're in that fear with the agent telling you that there could be 3 other buyers.
Yeah.
So you're just slowing that process down as well.
You are.
Yeah.
And it's incredible because,
it's a safety net.
It is. Mm. And you talk about, cases I remember, and there's been quite a few, particularly this year, and I'm not sure why, but I think because there's been so much more property on the market. But you go in, I remember we were looking at a home in St. Helier's for a client, and it had a complicated title. It was a cross lease property, and it was perfect for her. She was based in Australia. She was moving back to New Zealand. She was going to hold it for investment and then move back into it. And it was perfect in every way. The agents were fantastic. But for all intents and purposes, if you looked at the title and looked at the flats plan, it looked like it was a defective flats plan. What it was essentially it hadn't been recorded properly as stairs versus a balcony, and it involved a number of calls to council and getting the inspector to look at it. So there was a lot of due diligence to be done. But ultimately, where there's a problem, there's usually a solution.
Mm.
You can find a way. You've just got to muddle your way through it sometimes.
All right, let's turn now to the current market. Mm. How would you describe what you're seeing out there across Auckland or even New Zealand more broadly?
I think the market would be described, if I had one word for it, would be confused.
Mm.
Because there is, on paper, there are more homes than there's been in years on the market. You've got so many options, so much potential, but it's almost too many options for some people, I think, and they're struggling to actually move forward with what should we buy, how much should we pay for it.
Right.
So I'm thinking about the Auckland market in particular. I think there are people who assume that everything is a bargain, and it's not. You know, a lot of good, and I always say this and I ramble on about it, good quality homes sell for fair prices. You will look back and go, that was a great property. That was a great property, but at the moment, you will get a fair price for a property. And I think some buyers actually miss out on really good opportunities because they're so determined to get a bargain without accepting that vendors aren't necessarily going to bend over backwards. You know, they are going to, they're probably more concerned and probably a little more proactive at the moment and more motivated. But there's also people, I say this, they say, you know, they have to sell. I say, no one, very few people have to sell a property. Unless the bank is knocking at the door, most people can actually stay in their home if they really want to. So I think that people are a little bit confused. In terms of the market in general across Auckland, there is a lot of stock. There are some really fantastic buys out there. And we've certainly, I mean, we're the busiest we've been. Every year our business grows in terms of busyness, and this year I love to think that winter is a nice quiet time and I can dream of going to a different country to relax. That's not been feasible. We've had a manic June and July.
And you have buyers outside of Auckland as well?
We have buyers outside Auckland, but always buying within Auckland. That is where we've chosen to focus.
Right. Yeah.
But we have buyers in across the country. A lot of buyers who are they say, we had a lady ring us the other day. She said, I have been coming up and down to Auckland weekend after weekend. I'm totally annoyed. It's becoming incredibly. I said, how would you describe it? She goes, miserable. I said, I bet it is. She said, I've spent thousands and thousands of dollars on flights flying up and going down. And she said, I just don't know the market. The photos aren't what I think they're going to be. And I think also when I spoke to her, it was really understanding, trying to understand, well, what is my money actually buy and how does that compare? A lot of people go, oh, it's so expensive compared to where I live. Like, I understand that Auckland is expensive relative to the rest of the country. Totally get it. So a lot of our clients are across the country. We've had a few who moved down to Arrowtown, Queenstown, then realised they actually need an Auckland pad.
Right.
They need somewhere for the kids to come in. We've had a few who do have children in boarding school, and they're like, if the kids are sick, they need somewhere that they can go to that we can meet them, or we want something that we can Airbnb the rest of the time.
Nice.
Quite a few investors as well, again, attract to Auckland because it is, they deem it the sort of financial hub of the country, and they think it's an easy place to get tenants. And then we've got clients from overseas, a number of Kiwis living in London, living in the US. We bought for some people living in Japan last year, quite a lot living in Australia. So again, eyes and ears on the ground, someone they can trust, someone they know is going to get them the right home. And then, I mean, bizarrely, we've bought for a number of Europeans moving to New Zealand. They have residence visas, they're moving down, and they say, we do not want to move into a rental property and then have to move our dog, cats, children, furniture again. We want to buy the right home now and actually have a warm home to move into as soon as we land on the ground.
So with this current market, would you say it is that buyers are generally in a stronger position at the moment, or is that a little bit overstated?
I think it is slightly overstated because vendors still have power. We've been in negotiation on a property a couple of weeks back, and the agent said to me, he goes, Alex, never forget, they still own the home. And I was like, you're completely right. It doesn't really matter what we have asked for. The vendor still owns the home right up until that deal goes unconditional. So buyers certainly have better options and more options than they've had for many years. And I think you are seeing more motivated vendors in general, but I wouldn't say it means that, you know, it's bargain of the century everywhere.
Are those vendors adjusting their expectations, or are we still holding on to that peak market thinking?
I spoke at the, I was asked to a conference, the Harcourts conference, to speak at the national event earlier this year, and I was speaking to one of the auctioneers there, and he made such a good point. He said, in property values, buyers tend to track the market relatively easily. Like, if you tell buyers you've got to spend more because the market's going up, they do. He said it's much slower for vendors to follow the track down. So buyers will adjust and vendors take longer to adjust. And I went away and I thought about that and I thought, I think he's right, actually. I think vendors do take longer. And the problem you're seeing is so many vendors who bought in 2020, 2021, and they are feeling the pain of those prices relative to what it is now. I think also there are a lot of vendors who are downsizing out of large family homes. As we know, we've got an aging population. And for them, their wealth is tied up in the value of their home. So that was their retirement plan. Mm. And that takes a while to, you know, if they're going, actually, I'm not going to achieve what I thought I was going to, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. With properties sitting longer and the amount of properties that are on the market, I think people are assuming there is, it's a world of opportunities. Mm. What are some of the risks that you're seeing that perhaps buyers themselves are not seeing when we do have this sort of glut, I guess?
I think because people end up pursuing a lot of properties, they burn out of energy and time quite quickly. They go, I've looked at so many homes, I'm over it.
So then do they make the wrong decision because they're done?
Exactly. Yeah. And what you see is people go, well, I looked at five properties, I've invested in four building reports, that's cost me $4,000, plus I've bought my mum and dad or my friend through all these properties, they're over it, I'm over it. Buyer fatigue is a real thing. Yeah. People get completely over it. And I describe it as if you went into Farmers and you were looking for a new cologne or perfume, and the first couple you tried on, you could distinguish. But when you tried on 8 or 10, you don't know which one is which. And you see that with buyers. They actually lose focus on what it is they're trying to achieve, and sometimes trying to achieve too much. Mm. So I think the risks that buyers face at the moment is having too many options, struggling to qualify those options, burning out, getting frustrated when they miss a property, especially when they think it's a buyer's market. You know, you can see people get really upset. They think, oh, I thought I had that in the bag and someone else bought it. How dare them? People not doing due diligence because there is so much and because they're rushing through them. A friend of mine bought, you know, she was just so tired of it. She'd miss out a number of properties. Fortunately, she has bought a great property, but I said, how was the building report? She goes, oh, I didn't get one on that last one. I was so over it and I've spent so much money. I went, oh, God. It's expensive.
So you're noticing a bit of that in the due diligence field, that people are just sort of glossing over or missing them altogether?
They do. And I mean, part of it is that, you know, the being clouded by wanting to be in the home. When you think about it, people, and it doesn't really matter whether it's investors or owner-occupiers, people imagine owning the property. They envisage themselves in it, or they envisage what it's going to mean for their future. And I do think it clouds their view of the property. We're perhaps a little, I have to remember to not be too, you know, cut and dry about these things, because we just look at it and we go, that's not a good enough property, let's move on to the next one. You've got to bring your clients' feelings along with you, because they've, you know, they've really imagined themselves in it. So people do miss details on due diligence. People become confused. People, I think, I say to clients, write down your priorities. Don't just put them in your head. Write them down and classify what is a must-have versus what's actually a nice-to-have, and let's focus on those things.
When it comes to the due diligence, are you noticing things in the market more common now than, say, 2 or 3 years ago? And I'm meaning the problems. Like, is that an issue? Or I guess if you're looking for an investor and we've got healthy homes regulations, are you sort of walking into some homes and going straight out the door going, actually, it's going to cost $50,000 just to get this compliant?
Like, definitely.
What are you seeing?
I think the thing I've noticed in the last couple of years is people are becoming very, very worried about insurance. And in Auckland, we've seen the impact of those floodplains.
Yes,
and I feel so sorry for vendors, because you have these floodplains. Your property might have been completely dry in 2023 and sit at the top of the hill, but unfortunately you fall under the same floodplain as your neighbour who's at the bottom of the hill and did flood. So, and that is tragic, because people go, you know, I have current insurance, and what buyers are worried about is, I understand the house is dry, but am I always going to be able to get insurance for the property? So I think that is certainly something I've seen increase in the last few years. I think people are starting, or hopefully starting, to understand a little bit more about what their LIM and their title actually means, and understanding. I think New Zealand's always had a bit of a, she'll be right, my home, my castle, she's weatherboard on a full site, of course the house is fine. And you just think, well, actually, there are legalities behind this. And if you buy a property that's got historic issues, they're your responsibility. You can't just, you may not be able to fob them onto someone else. You might have to, like, you know, pick these things up. And it's happened to a lot of people. I'd say the majority of clients we've dealt with, or properties we've bought, something has come up and vendors just genuinely haven't known about it. And it can always be resolved. Again, wherever there's a problem, there's typically a solution. But getting paperwork tidy is very important.
So what's your top three tips or checks that you think every buyer should be doing if they're not with you, but they've yep. gone into a property somewhere in the country, no matter how good a deal looks, what are your top three checks?
The ones you absolutely must do is you must get your finance sorted. The number of mortgage advisors I know who go, oh, I got a call from such and such who said to me, hey, I just bought a home. Do you think I can get finance? It's you've got to have your finance proof.
Yeah, it's the hand up in the auction room and they haven't been to the bank
exactly.
yet.
Yeah. And I think you'd be disturbed by how many people do that.
Yeah,
they just
totally.
Assume. They, yeah. I think also because they get pre-approval, they think, oh, I can go out and buy a home. The banks are looking, they're scrutinizing these properties more and more and going, what's going on with the sale and purchase agreement? Show me that there's no issues with the roof. Send me the building report.
Yeah, the pre-approval is for amount, but not the property.
Not the property.
Yeah,
and I think people forget that. And the thing about the properties is that the banks are scrutinizing. They are looking more carefully. And the third is legal review. It is, and I really like, engaging a property conveyancer who's really familiar with the documentation. A lot of lawyers have got a property conveyancing background, but understanding, don't just receive the report, read it and understand it. You know, understand what are the risks that come with this property. I'm going to throw a fourth in there, insurance. You absolutely must check and don't punt, just because the agent goes, oh, it's currently insured, don't punt on that. You must get your own insurance quote and check that they will give you an insurance certificate if you buy the property. So the four pillars that you must meet.
And I'm guessing if you're buying for someone, you've got access to good people you refer them to for some of those experts. It's always, this show talks all the time about the experts in your toolbox.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Steve and I were talking about this just before the show started, that when you recommend someone, it is a bit of a reflection on you. So choosing your consultants wisely is very important. A number of the industries are not regulated. You think like building inspections. I've looked at two different building inspections on the same property that have said vastly different things. So understanding who is the inspector, have they got indemnity insurance? How much experience do they have? Just because they have a bunch of reviews that say, oh, thank goodness Bob, the inspector, told me not to buy this property, doesn't necessarily mean they're a good inspector. They might be a terrible inspector. They might, you do need someone who's quite rational and can give you good, solid, sound advice. So we've spent the last 3 years building up our team of who we think is the best and people that we trust and we would use on our own homes and, in fact, have used. I mean, the mortgage advisors and the building inspectors we recommend, we have used for our own purchases.
Brilliant. Are you finding these days, thanks to technology, the amount of information that you can source on a property is so much better than it used to be? Or has that opened a different minefield because you've got to decide what's accurate?
It's really hard, isn't it, tech? I think one of the tech... AI has been wonderful and terrible. AI allows you to review information very quickly. I would argue it then... It's got an information potential bias that you tend to assume that whatever it pumps out is correct and it may not be. And I think there are certain tools like New Zealanders are quite obsessed with CVs. And they go to me all the time, okay, so the average CV's here, what do you think we should buy it for? 15% below CV, 20% below CV? I said, the CV, it's a guide, and so often it is wrong. You cannot depend on the CV. The other one is people obviously use the tools online. Well, the One Roof guide told me it's in this range. I said, totally get it, but it's an algorithm. And their tech is really impressive, but it doesn't take into account the fact that the back garden is really damp and has moss growing in it. Why is that? Or the property's been renovated, but
there's
really cheaply.
There's a game pad next door.
Exactly.
Did that get spotted in the algorithm? Yeah.
Exactly. So people, I think, everyone's wading their way through this, trying to go, how do I make sure I'm making a good decision? How do I make sure I'm paying the right price and not overpaying? And people are turning to tech to try and get an answer. And unfortunately, real estate, a lot of it, the what goes on between the transaction is a lot of emotion and feeling and ego and pride, and that is often what dictates the final price.
Are there any particular suburbs or property types in Auckland that's sort of really going off at the moment for you?
For, it depends on the type of property we're trying to buy, obviously. For investors, we love brick and tile units. We love brick and tiles. We can't get enough of them. Solid, built on good foundations, often in really, really good streets, and good layout, quite easy to rent. We've bought quite a few, like in the Lower North Shore, great for getting tenants who work at the hospitals. And hospital tenants are brilliant. You know, doctors, nurses. They're too exhausted.
There's no parties.
There's no time. They're too tired. But really responsible, good tenants to have.
And secure jobs.
Yeah. Exactly. So we have bought a lot on the North Shore. We are buying a lot of renovated villas for people who are downsizing. They're coming out of the big family home. They want something on single level. They don't want apartments. They want a nice renovated home. We buy a lot of family homes, and it's all about the school zoning. Mount Albert Grammar Zone, Glendowie Zone. We are Rangitoto College Zone. And that's hard because for those families, again, time poor, don't want to waste money on due diligence and then finding out they're not going to buy the home. And, you know, schooling and lifestyle community really become the priorities.
All right, we're down to the last few minutes. Are you ready for quick fire round?
Go on.
All right, quick fire round. Are auctions behaving differently right now?
Yes, more negotiation, less selling under the hammer, or going into a room and then coming out and selling under the hammer. But you've got to get in that little room and negotiate.
Are you seeing more off-market deals happening?
Definitely. A bird
in
the
hand. And I guess some of that is your personal relationship you've got with agents.
It is, it is. I mean, we do buy quite a lot off-market, and it is relationship-based, but in this market where there is more supply, a vendor goes, you know what, here's an offer, it is a serious, willing, qualified buyer. Yes, I could go to market, but what's the risk? I, A, lose this buyer, and B, actually just waste 4 weeks and have all the neighbours coming through my house.
Love it. How are interest rates influencing the behaviour in real time these days?
We only work with really qualified buyers, so it's hard to say across the market, but I think buyers in this market do actually need to buy a property. So whether interest rates are going up, down or sideways, they're going, I need to buy, I need to move into my next property. I think they possibly in some ways impact vendors a little bit more, because if they bought at the peak of the market, they were already stretched. Interest rates going up obviously puts a real, you know, if you've come off fixed, it's a big pressure on the purse.
Is there one recent trend that's really surprised you in the housing space?
People will pay a premium for something that's been beautifully renovated. And I think there used to be this idea, and maybe driven again by TV shows, of like, we're going to get in there and we're going to wear overalls.
But is that the time poor again too? We're actually wanting to walk into something we can just enjoy.
Exactly.
You're right. There was a time, now we can do this out.
That was a lovely idea of, you know, flicking paint at each other. And now people are like, no. We want our weekends to enjoy life and enjoy our family. We will, you know, we really value a beautifully renovated property. And the beautifully renovated ones, you know, they do fetch a good price.
Yeah. Do you find investors approach property or approach the market differently to their owner-occupier who wants to move in?
They do to a point. I think there's still, no matter how much people say, oh, I'm not emotional, there is still an element of emotion, because ultimately, especially in this market, you need your property to attract tenants. So the property has to be attractive. You know, there has to be something that makes people want to live there. So I think there are, owner-occupiers are more driven, obviously, by the emotion and the community and the feeling of the property. But we find our investors are still going, you know, if the worst came to the worst, if I personally had to move into this property, would I want to?
Right.
Would I like to live there?
Right.
So there is still the pull to quality.
Now, it's election year looming. Is there anything that you're watching over the next 6 to 12 months as a result of that?
I certainly think capital gains tax will have a big impact. You know, that is going to have a few people worried. What I always find interesting in election year is people go, well, I'm going to wait to see the outcome of the election. I say, well, what will you do if the right bloc get in? Oh, I'll sell. And what if the left come in? Oh, I'll sell. I'm like, well, that's probably
let's do it. Let's do it.
So there's nothing I've seen that would be of great concern. I think capital gains tax will obviously have an impact, will make people a little bit nervous, but I hate the, you know, we're always talking about little green shoots of growth, but I do think you're actually just starting to see a little bit of confidence coming back, and I think a bit of steadiness will see house prices. I don't think they're going to have the big jumps, but I think just a little bit of growth, keep moving forward and up.
Brilliant. How can people get in touch with you and engage your services?
Thank you. We're available at martellibuyers.co.nz. You can find plenty of information about us and on our LinkedIn, Martelli Buyers.
Alex, I could talk to you for hours. You are just a mind full of knowledge. It's been an absolute pleasure. You'll have to come back because I feel like we've just scratched the surface of the conversation.
Yes, come back with stories.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And do reach out to Alex and get her working for you. Keep her busy. Keep her out of mischief.
Cheers.
Thanks so much. We are out of time. Catch us next week for the final episode for season 8. We'll look forward to joining us. Catch you in the week. Travel safe home. Have a good rest of your week. Take care.